Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 51, The Legendary Kings of East Anglia. Of all the early Anglo-Saxon kingdoms, East Anglia has probably the richest legendary history. While the historicity of this history is of course questionable, I believe that it's important to discuss it, since it serves to situate the East Anglians, as well as their heirs, the Mercians, in a larger North Sea cultural zone, but also because it links some of the most famous works of Old English literature directly to the history of this small kingdom. In the bonus episode on the poem Widsith, which can be found on the Patreon page, I talked a bit about how the Anglo-Saxons shared a larger legendary mythos with their Germanic kin on the continent. This mythos looked back to the period known by scholars as the Migration Age, the time in the 4th and 5th centuries when Germanic peoples from Scandinavia and Central Europe began to migrate into the territory of the Roman Empire, probably as a result of the expansion of the Huns led by Attila in the east. While there is no written evidence from the peoples of this time, it's remained fixed in the memory of their descendants as a time of heroes, in which many of the later kingdoms and kin groups of the early Middle Ages and the Viking Age saw their origins. A trove of figures and stories served as a common iconographic language between the Germanic peoples of Northern Europe. We find these figures not just in Widsith, but also in poems like Beowulf and Deor. In Germany, these stories inspired the Nibelungenlied, which related the story of the Nibelungs and the tragic dragon slayer Siegfried, while in Scandinavia, references to this legendarium pepper skaldic poetry, the Eddic literature, and is most fully developed in the class of saga called legendary sagas, or Fornaldarsoga, which deal with a time prior to the settlement of Iceland, usually referring to about the 4th and 5th centuries. The kings of the East Angles seem to have been, or at least wanted to appear, linked directly to some of the most prominent legendary dynasties of this Old North. Other legendary dynasties, like those of Northumbria and Wessex, also claimed similar lines of descent, but it is in East Anglia where we find claimed associations which link directly to known stories from other literature, thus allowing us to paint some picture of the legendary past claimed by the rulers of the East Anglian kingdom. As I've already mentioned, the vast majority of Anglo-Saxon royal lines claimed descent from Woden, as attested in the surviving king lists. Woden, if you'll recall, being the Old English equivalent of the Old Norse Odin, a fact that may indicate some older beliefs regarding divine kingship. The kings of East Anglia were no different, but what concerns me in this episode are the human descendants of Woden that linked the god to his East Anglian descendants. The earliest king of the East Angles, as given in the 12th century Textus Rufensis, a compilation of law codes and king lists made in 12th century Rochester, was a man called Wea Wilhelming. On its own, this tells us nothing about this Wea, but one theory that may help to shed light on who he was believed to be holds that the name Wea is actually a shortened form of a longer name, for example something akin to Bob for Robert or Tom for Thomas. To support this theory is that the name itself, as it exists, doesn't seem to have a clear meaning in Old English, which most Old English names do, since the Anglo-Saxons used the practice of compounding to create their names. That is, fusing two words together to create a name, which usually implied something about the person so named. So, for example, Alfred means elf-advised, and Wolfstan means wolfstone. This naming practice even holds true for legendary figures, so for Weyr to not follow that practice seems suggestive. It has been argued that Weyr is a shortened version of the name Weyostan, meaning sacred stone. Weyostan, or as he was called in Old Norse, Vestein, is a figure mentioned in both Beowulf and in the Old Norse poem Kolfsvisa. It is from Beowulf that we get the most information about Weyostan. It is there that we learn that he played a prominent role in the second of what scholars call the Swedish-Geatish Wars. These semi-legendary wars which took place in southern Sweden between the Swedes and the Geats, and which are not really discussed in Old Norse literature, but which Beowulf and Old English literature seemingly remember quite clearly, involved back and forth raiding between the Swedes and their neighbours to the south, the Geats. Judging by Beowulf being a Geat, it seems that the Anglo-Saxons identified strongly with this side of the conflict, but the poem itself indicates that the boundary between Swede and Geat was not clearly defined. So Weyostan fought for the Swedes against the Geats, yet he was a member of the Wegmunding clan. Beowulf and his father Ecgtheow were themselves part of this clan, and Weyostan's son Wiglaf is not only presented as a member of the elderly Beowulf's retinue in the later part of the poem, but he's also cast as the most loyal and the most heroic, and himself becomes king of the Geats upon Beowulf's death following his fight with the dragon. Weyostan, we are told, earned a good reputation among the Swedes by killing Eanmund, a nephew of the Swedish king Onala, who was seeking sanctuary among the Geats following the death of his father. In return for Weyostan's killing Eanmund, Onala gave him Eanmund's sword and armour, which Weyostan later bequeathed to Wiglaf, and with which Wiglaf came to Beowulf's aid against the dragon. In the same raid against the Geats in which Weyostan killed Eanmund, the king of the Geats, Heardred, was also killed, and this spurred the Geats, including Beowulf himself, to support Eanmund's brother Eadgils in a campaign of revenge against Onala. The Old Norse Kolfsvisa contains a brief allusion to this counter-raid's climactic battle on the ice of Lake Vänern, where Eadgils killed Onala and became king of the Swedes. Beowulf also refers to Eadgils' victory, but it doesn't mention the location. In the wake of Onala's death, Weyostan somehow came to live among the Geats. Frederick Kleber, the Old English scholar whose critical edition of Beowulf is a classic of the field, suggests that with Eadgils on the throne of Sweden, Weyostan was forced into exile, which resulted in his living among the Geats, who presumably helped him pay Weyrgild to Eadgils for killing Eanmund. A similar story was attached to Beowulf's father Ecgtheow, who was himself a Swedish member of the Wegmundingas clan, and who had killed a member of another clan. When the Wegmundingas refused or were unable to pay the Weyrgild, Ecgtheow was exiled and wound up in the court of King Hrothgar in Denmark. The Danes paid the Weyrgild, and Ecgtheow returned north, eventually earning fame among the Geats and establishing a bond with the Danes that ultimately sent Beowulf to Heorot to kill Grendel, thus putting into motion the whole drama of Beowulf. A similar situation may have occurred with Weyostan, although Beowulf itself doesn't tell us that. As well as being Wegmundingas, Weyostan and Ecgtheow are both identified in the poem as Sylfingas. Sylfing is the Old English form of Skilfingr, in which Old Norse was an alternate name for the Yngling dynasty that ruled Sweden. The Ynglings kind of function as a founding family of Old Norse heroic myth. As related by the Icelandic lawyer Snorri Sturluson in his text Heimskringla, which is a collection of sagas about the history of the kings of Norway, the Ynglings produced not only the kings of Sweden, but also the kings of Norway, leading ultimately to Harald Fairhair, who united the kingdom of Norway into a single kingdom. When building the first of the sagas of Heimskringla, Ynglingasaga, Snorri used a poem that already existed called Ynglingatal as his main source, from which he built up the story of the Yngling dynasty from its earliest days. At the head of this dynasty sat Yngvi, better known today to fans of Norse mythology as Yngvi Freyr, or just Freyr, a god associated with fertility, brother of Freya, the goddess of beauty and sexuality, both children of Njörður, god of the sea. Yngvi also seems to have had some legacy in Anglo-Saxon England, but he was known there as Yng, and seems to have been viewed as an ancestral figure of some kind. We find him, for example, in the 11th century Old English rune poem. This poem, which is part of a larger Northern European tradition of rune poems, served to name and then describe each of the runes known to the later Anglo-Saxons, which are usually referred to as the Futhorc, in contrast to the Norse Futhark. The Ng rune is identified thus, quote, Ing was first among the East Danes, seen by men, until he soon afterwards departed over the ways, a wagon running after him. Thus, the Herdingas named this hero. End quote. Ing was first among the East Danes, presumably then some kind of ancestor. This link to ancestry is further suggested by the name recorded for the peoples who lived along the North Sea coast, in the areas of Jutland, Holstein, and Frisia in antiquity. Tacitus, in his Germania, says that these people called themselves the Yngveones, a name meaning sons of Ing. The regions where these Yngveones lived match exactly with those that produced the Angles, Saxons, Jutes, and Frisians, who later migrated to Britain and became the English. On these grounds, it seems that the early English understood themselves to be the descendants of a divine ancestor called Ing. While Woden was an ancestor of kings, Ing was a common ancestor of all the English. I realise that this has been a lot of names and a lot of myths and a lot of stories, so let's do a quick recap. The first name in the East Anglian king list of the Textus Rufensis is Wea, which may be a shortened version of Weostan. Weostan was a hero in Old English and Old Norse legendary literature, associated with both the Swedes and the Geats. Weostan was also a member of the Scylfing dynasty that ruled Sweden, and his son became king of the Geats. Thus, while there is no reason to think that Weostan was ever a king in East Anglia himself, despite what the Textus Rufensis says, the later East Anglian kings used his legend to tie themselves to the royal lines of both Sweden and Geatland, two peoples who played a major role in the Anglo-Saxons' legendarium, thereby imbuing the kings of the East Angles with a great deal of prestige. These legends may reflect some memory of close Swedish links, though. Several of the objects found at the Sutton Hoo burial show strong stylistic links to contemporary royal burials in Sweden, a fact which suggests continued close contact between the East Anglians and Swedes. In light of this, the story of Weostan and the Swedish-Geatish Wars may have some deep meaning to the elite of East Anglia, who regarded both the Swedes and the Geats as ancestors of some kind. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant-quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries anytime of when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code ANGLO50 at factormeals.com/ANGLO50 to get 50% off.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Paul Brandis introducing my podcast, Countdown to Dallas. It's a fascinating, in-depth look at the seemingly unconnected events that led to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's based on my book of the same title. In that book and in this podcast, I go all the way back to 1939, when Lee Harvey Oswald was born into a troubled and dysfunctional family. I'll follow his transient and often violent teenage years and young adulthood, painting a fuller picture of the man who would later become Kennedy's killer. I also take a look at events unfolding in that era, like Cuba and Vietnam, and I'll unpack the conspiracy theories too, not one of which has ever been conclusively proven. Subscribe to Countdown to Dallas at evergreenpodcasts.com or your favorite listening app, October 31st.
History is the greatest adventure story, but does it ever leave you wondering what the women were doing all that time? This is Lori from the Her Half of History podcast, and the answer is that some women were seizing power, or escaping slavery, or spying for their country, or creating artistic masterpieces, while countless others were doing the laundry, getting married, and wondering why their clothes don't have more pockets. If you would like to hear the stories of women doing all of those things, check out Her Half of History at herhalfofhistory.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy what I'm doing here, then it really helps me when you leave a review or a rating on the podcast provider you're using to listen to this. It also helps when you subscribe to the show's YouTube channel or when you become a supporter over on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and transcripts, as well as the opportunity to request specific topics, all by pledging to one of the show's Patreon tiers. And speaking of patrons, thank you so much for your support. Anyway, back to the show. It's very likely that Weohstan was grafted onto the beginning of the East Anglian royal line as a means of earning prestige. The son of Weohstan, as recorded in the Textus Rufensis, is Wuffa, a son who is not mentioned in any of the legendary literature about his father. Given that it was Wuffa who gave his name to the East Anglian dynasty, the Wuffingas, he probably was the oldest founding figure, who was retroactively linked to Weohstan. An older tradition found in the 9th century Welsh chronicle called the Historia Brittonum identifies Wuffa's father as Gwilym Gwerca. Gwilym Gwerca is explicitly identified by the Historia as the first king of the East Angles. Since this figure's name is almost certainly mangled by the chronicler, it is unclear what his Anglian name would have been, thus making it difficult to tell who this pre-Wuffa ruler of East Anglia was. Some scholars suggest that Wuffa was linked by marriage to the German tribe called the Wani, who are mentioned by the Byzantine historian Procopius. Procopius claimed that the princess of this people was married to a king of the Angli, who, some suggest, may have been Wuffa. However, that is very far from certain. Given that there was an Anglia in Scandinavia, it seems just as likely that Procopius is referring to their king and not to that of the East Angles. There simply isn't enough information, and the link between the Wani and Wuffa is speculative. The later medieval historian Roger of Wendover dated Wuffa's reign to 571 to 578. Exactly how he arrived at these dates is not clear, since outside of legends and one possible place name, that being Ufford in Suffolk, which means something like Wuffa's Ford, Wuffa's reign has left no mark on the historical record. What there may have been was probably destroyed during the Viking Age, thus it's unlikely that Roger's dates are based on anything other than just speculation, probably informed by Bede, but not taken directly from him. Much the same is true for Wuffa's son, Titila. Like his father, we know next to nothing about him, and are forced to speculate. It has been suggested that the name Titila is etymologically similar to Totila, the nom de guerre of the king of the Ostrogoths, who reigned from 541 to 552. There is long-standing debate over exactly what relationship, if any, the Goths had to the Geats, besides their names sounding kind of similar. Old Norse and Old English both consistently define them as separate peoples, yet there are some cultural similarities which suggest both originated in southern Sweden. It is possible, then, that Titila's name reflects yet again a sign of close ties between East Anglia and Sweden. Bede tells us that Titila died around 616. Assuming that he became king at some point in the 750s, although since this is based on the questionable dating of Wulfa's reign, we really can't be sure how reliable that is. Anyway, assuming a 570s accession, then Titila reigned for several decades. This is a common feature of many of these legendary kings. Their reigns are longer than really seems likely given the time and the situations in which they lived. Most likely these unusually long reigns are later creations or distorted memories of important rulers that were expanded to fill in gaps of uncertainty or to hide any inconvenient disruptions in a ruling dynasty's claim to the throne. As this episode has tried to demonstrate, however, even such fictions or half-truths can contain some useful insights. In this case, they serve to highlight the very close ties that certainly existed between East Anglia and Sweden. The one part, and really the only part, of Titila's reign that is definitely not legendary is that he was succeeded by Radwald, the first certainly historical king of the East Angles. Bede claimed that Radwald was Titila's son. We can't really be certain of that, especially if Titila didn't actually exist, but that Radwald himself existed is beyond dispute. And I will say more about him, as well as the famous burial that may have given us his body, in the next episode. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Once again, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.